Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Vietnam Vets Still Coming Home is a monumental book that chronicles the monumental lives as well as the mundane details of Vietnam veterans before, during, and after the war. Joining us today in the studios in Vermilion, photographer Steve Feimer. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, and thanks for having us.
Also with us, Larry Tenninger, who is Tenninger.
Yes.
Tenninger.
That's fine.
Who is featured in the book. And we're going to start with Steve, because this is a, you know, for listeners who can't see it, it's more than a coffee table book. It's really, it's as heavy as the packs we used to carry. A lot of folks are featured, a lot of stories told, expansive essays, beautiful photography. Tell me about the project and kind of how it got started in your mind.
Well, the way it got started was in 2009, I was photographing at a veterans event, and as I was putting away my my photo gear, this guy came up to me and asked me if I could take slides and turn them into prints, and I said, yeah, I can do that, and he said, well, I have slides from Vietnam. I was a door gunner in a helicopter in Vietnam. And then he said, I'm going to talk to my parole officer to see if I can't get into one of your classes. I said, you're on parole? He said, yeah, I got into a fight shortly after Vietnam out in West River, and I killed a guy, and I did 13 years up in our state penitentiary, but he was on parole now. So the next day he came in, he had two plastic coffee or tobacco bags full of slides that he took in Vietnam. And so I scanned them, I turned them into prints, and I was just taken by the slides, and I thought, gee, this guy's got quite a story. I wonder how many more are out there. And so this led me to another individual's story, Bud Day, who's from Sioux City, Iowa, Medal of Honor recipient. And every time I would talk to a vet, he'd say, oh, you've got to go get this guy's story. And so it kept rolling. And first I was going to do six stories and be 6 months. Well, it's been 6 years and 31 stories later that we finally decided that we've got to bring it to a close. So,
what was the project like for you then over 6 years? You didn't anticipate dedicating that kind of time, but you did. So there must have been something that you really couldn't walk away from.
Well, I just felt that it was important to capture these stories, because once these folks pass away, their stories oftentimes disappear with them. And for many of these people that I interviewed, they'd never talked about Vietnam.
Right.
And so this was an opportunity for them to tell their stories, and I think an opportunity for people to read their stories and gain some appreciation for what they went through. And so that's what kind of drove me through 31 interviews.
had nobody ever asked them? Had they not talked about it because it was a certain amount of time needed to go by? Did you just ask the right question at the right time?
Well, I think that in many cases they just felt that they were old enough now. It was a long enough period between the time they served and now that they wanted to tell their stories. And I think for a lot of them, they just felt that they had to get it out. So it was cathartic in a lot of regards that we were hearing stories that really hadn't been told before.
Right.
So
right. Let's bring Larry into the
I'd
conversation.
Say being
yeah, Larry,
one of the
yeah.
participants, that my experience with it was first felt an honor to be asked, but also a little apprehensive because I didn't feel deserving of that, you know, in a way.
Deserving of
just being in a book.
Okay.
Well, I was a little bit raw because I'd just come back from my third tour in Iraq after a year on medical hold. And the reason it worked so well, I think, in my case, is that Steve had worked up a plan talking to the vets that was really casual, friend to friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it like? It wasn't a lot of drilling questions of tell me what this was like. You know. So then it just kind of, for me, it just poured out in a way, talking about things that I never really really talked to anyone else about.
Yeah.
And it was a positive thing in that way too.
Well, had people asked you? Had someone sat down and said, you know, I just really want to hear the story of what it was like in Vietnam? For example, let me ask you this. So you served in Vietnam, you correct. Served in Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me those guys in Desert Storm didn't ask you about Vietnam.
Every solitary yeah. one of them did. But as a matter of fact, and one of the reasons yeah. I think this whole concept is so great is that from telling that heritage, you know, the past, right. it helped these young men at that point in time in the present to go ahead in the future.
Right.
You know,
right.
and yeah, every one of them, I never said a word about what I did or what I did, but the word got out, and it was a gravitation towards right. that.
Yeah.
And I was able to take that and feel the responsibility of it and use it
right.
forward. But it doesn't just stop there. It goes past that. My father was a Marine on Okinawa and Guadalcanal. And I would, these Marines, before we went in our first engagement, I would come up to him and I said, let me give you the power, Marine. I go, power, what's that, Doc? I'd hold out my hand and have this ring that you can see here right now. And I'd say, this is my father's ring. He wore it on Okinawa and Guadalcanal. And I would touch their hand and say, you now have the power. Mm-hmm. They were connected immediately to the Leathernecks of World War II. Well, in the case of this old dog, I was able to do that same kind of thing that my father did for me, pass it on to them. And so that's what that whole in the military right now, I feel it is the people in the military that truly understand what Vietnam vets kind of went through, but a lot of people don't. And that's where this book and what it does through the words of the people and the pictures tells that story that needs to be told.
When did your father give you the ring? Which becomes really a talisman throughout all your journey. So was it passed down to you?
He passed down to me the values of the Marine Corps. And when I was selected before a board for this high honor, they said, where do you derive your strength? And I told them straight out, I derive my strength from my father, who lived out the Navy and Marine Corps values of honor, courage, and commitment, both in and out of uniform. Mm. And that's a type of heritage that right now, you know, Vietnam vets, when we see them walking down the street, I feel personally that instead of looking at that vet as some old dog like me, you know, looking like 40 miles of bad road, of thinking back, this man was a warrior. He was doing things for our country that no one else would ever do. At a time when everyone was against it, he still did it. And that's a sense of pride when I see someone else. I just can't let go. Even though I don't go up and go, I'm not a member of a lot of organizations and blah, blah, blah. But I will say this, that I go to the VA a lot, and when I see these Vietnam vets, I have a connection there without ever saying a word. Mm-hmm. And I just think that a book like this can help others bridge that gap, because let's face it, we're living in a different world now.
Right.
And feel that same connection of what this person really did and why they did it.
Yeah. Steve, did you have a sense, as you talked to these folks, of the commonality of the values and the sense that not only did they serve, but they served at a time when there was a great amount of vocal opposition to what they were doing?
Yes, and a lot of them talked about, you know, the coming home part of it, and that's the subtitle of the book, is that a lot of them were still struggling with what happened in Vietnam, the way that they were treated when they came back from Vietnam. And I think, fortunately, a lot of the veterans today really benefit from what the veterans went through in Vietnam in terms of their care, in terms of understanding. In Vietnam, they didn't even have a name for PTSD. It was shell shock or battle fatigue. But, you know, I think that the public's become more aware of the long-lasting kind of issues. And not all of the wounds were of the flesh. A lot of folks still suffer from debilitating mental issues associated with their time in Vietnam, and those have to be addressed too.
Mm. Larry, did you see that change as a corpsman? Were people sort of communicating that to you in Vietnam and then in Desert Storm and then in Iraq? Did you watch, you know, how it evolve, how the military dealt with it?
I had that, I guess, fortunate opportunity to see 26 years of military history flash, you know, going before my eyes and be part of it, boots on the ground. When I was in Vietnam, everyone was 19. When I turned 20, I was considered the old man. Well, of that issue of PTSD and seeing things that you can't forget, you can't turn the switch off even though you want to, going back home, people not know, you know, understanding, don't talk to anyone. Well, even as recent as I went through Desert Storm and even went into my tours into Iraq, I still hadn't quite got it yet because I was old school. I was brought up under this, you move forward, if you don't, you're a wimp. And I took a few people off the line when I was a senior enlisted because I actually thought they were weak until I began understanding what PTSD really is, what it is a result of and how it needs to be understood. And right now, today, I can say, myself included, that I got to give thanks to my wife who takes care, keeps me out of jail. And also that understanding when at the VA, for example, they now have teams of people that actually go through that and actually get at that true issue. Because when you take sane people and put them in an insane situation, things are going to happen. And now we finally, as Steve said, understand it better.
How did you survive that part of it, the insanity of the situation? How did you make it through?
It was put on me, personally, I had blocked out. I mean, just Vietnam was kind of something I had to get behind me. And I wanted to state it, used avoidance, which is, as a corpsman and a medic, I could put a mask on and move forward and never have anything bother me. And it wasn't until after my third tour, I was a faculty member here at University of South Dakota, and my wife had told me she was quitting her job, and I go, she wouldn't tell me why. Later she did, because she was worn out getting me out the door, because I was all over the place, and I was anyone who didn't toe the line like a Lance Corporal should for me. Well, I went to, she said, yeah, you know, this is on April 13th of 2009. April 14th, I went to the VA. And I saw a sign out in front. If you go to, anyone goes to Sioux Falls and looks at that brick building, there's a three-dimensional sign. Says the price of freedom is visible here. Mm-hmm. I got out. I walked towards that building. I couldn't take it. I went back to my car. Because these World War II vets were coming out, Korean vets in oxygen wheelchairs. And finally, I decided, do I want a family or go in and get some help? And I did. And it was through, I walked in that building, and it was actually the professionals at the VA that helped me personally accept what was going on with TBI plus PTSD plus physical things. Steve and I have even talked about it a little bit, of what a new normal is. Mm-hmm. You know, I still haven't quite got a handle on that one, but I need to. Mm-hmm. So I'd say it's been, if I wouldn't have the help of people that understand it now, I don't know where I'd be. Hmm. And there's unfortunately a lot of walking wounded out there that haven't got help.
Steve, this theme of coming home and making this transition away from the insanity of war to the new normal of life, a theme that you saw with a lot of Vietnam veterans, can you speak to that?
Well, a lot of them adjusted fairly well. I think it's a function of your mindset when you went over, what you saw once you were over there, and the way you were treated or accepted when you came home. I think the Native Americans, and we did interview a couple of Native Americans that went over to Vietnam, they had kind of a different homecoming and a different sending away than a lot of the non-Native Americans. There were welcoming home ceremonies in the kind of the warrior vein, and I think they were more warmly embraced by their community than a lot of the non-Native American veterans.
Right.
So But there were still, you know, at first I was going to try to do two interviews a day, but then the emotion that went into the telling of these stories, not only for the vets, but for myself, I soon realized that it was hard enough to get through just one story, because you're bringing up a lot of issues that have been buried for a long, long time, and they still cause a lot of pain for folks.
Larry, what was coming home like for you? What was your experience coming home? Do you want to talk about it or not?
I have several coming homes.
You do?
The first one, I got home a little early. I processed out when I hit the States a little early, so I was going to surprise my parents. I landed at the Sioux City Airport. I got Class A's on at the time, my dress uniform and a duffel bag. And I decided I'm going to just catch a ride and head home back. This was near Akron, a little town called Chatsworth. And I can take anybody to the exact spot on Highway 12, 10 miles out of Sioux City, where I finally realized no one was going to stop for me. And I went into a farmhouse and called my parents. I can't drive past that spot anymore, even though the mailbox is gone, hardly without it. So life goes on. I joined the Navy Reserve. Bang, I'm mobilized right away. I had one of the highest readiness ratings. So I go through Norfolk, Virginia. Lo and behold, I'm still in a dress uniform before the terrorist thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And we land at the same airport, Sioux City. And I see all these balloons. And I see all this stuff. And I look back behind me, and there's a young Air Force kid. And I knew that they were trained in San Antonio. And he was probably getting a big family reception. I walked into that Sioux City airport, and there were 12 Vietnam vets, six on each side, walking down. And at the end of it was a sign, "Welcome home, Vietnam vet. It's about time." And I have to tell you, to this day, two things. One, I don't know how on God's green earth these people found out about it at all. But I do know that it was a changing point in my life. Then time goes on, and I go to the first push into Iraq. And we're, you know, taking names. I was with the Corps. We were the 1st Infantry Battalion in. I had the honor of serving under Major General Mattis at the time. I saw him on a big Abrams tank, and that was outstanding. However, I made the choice when I hit the airport that I was going to dress in my Marine Corps Bravos, and I come down the tarmac. This was in Sioux Falls. Maybe that's why South Dakota. I like South Dakota better than Iowa. And there, all my family and friends, little flags waving, and they welcomed me in open arms at that time. And I had that honor and opportunity where other Vietnam vets never have and unfortunately never will.
The book we've been talking about is Vietnam Vets Still Coming Home. My guests, Steve Feimer, Larry Tenninger. Steve, where this book can be found, how people can get a copy?
We've decided to self-publish this because all of the proceeds from the sale of the book are going to Vietnam or going to veteran service organizations like the DAV, for example, or the Paralyzed Veterans of America. And so we're going to have our website up fairly soon. It's www.thevietnamvets.com. They'll be able to order right off the website. And right now we're in the process of raising funds for the first printing of the book. And all of those funds are directed to the DAV in Sioux Falls.
So if people wanted to contribute to that or help out with that, contact the Sioux Falls DAV.
Yep. Then. And it's tax deductible. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we just want the proceeds from this to help the vets that really need it. So, mm-hmm. And I said our goal was, when I talked to Larry on the way in, would be to sell 54,307 copies of the book, one for each name on the Vietnam Wall.
Wow. I think that's doable.
I hope so.
Steve, thank you. Larry, yeah, you still got you. The power there. So mm-hmm. Semper Fi from...
All right.
Any last thoughts that you want to leave us with?
Yes, thank you. I will say this. I look at Steve and what he is doing. He's a true patriot. And if these stories weren't told, it would never get out there. There's a saying I mentioned I found when I went to a Native American sweat, is that everyone went in, they said in the Lakota language, which translates to English, all my relation. And I asked them why they say that. And that's because they feel that a warrior dies twice. First, when their heart never beats again, and second and final time, when their name is never spoken again, and they can never let that happen. So with the types of things that Steve is doing, you know, I'm a grunt on the ground, I'm proud to be with him to help him, but that vision is gonna help keep that heritage, you know, going. And with his vision, you know, it's my job, you know this from being in the Corps or anyone in the Navy, officers run the Navy, but chiefs make the Navy run. So I'm ready to, you know, stand ready, willing, and able to make sure that we can do anything to get this funding done. This needs to be out there. And then every South Dakotan needs to get one, and for every library in this state. I mean, I just see the path towards victory here if we can all work together.
Come back and see us again. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.